Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Voice Actor Showcase, a podcast about voice actors and their stories. I'm June. Today, we'll meet a voice actor from Dallas, Texas. Originally from Tacoma, Washington, he found voiceover at the age of 18 on Tumblr, and his journey as a voice actor would start from there. Today, in addition to working as a musician and a drag performer, he works as a voice actor, writer, and director, known for his work in BL, anime, video games, and more. He is also the president and COO of Ascendant Animation, which we'll most definitely talk about. Please welcome Kiba Walker. Hello, Kiba. How are you?
Good. How are you, June?
I'm good. Thank you for being here.
No, thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Very, very, very glad that Water and Power are back.
Oh,
where you are.
Thank goodness. I was worried for a bit there. I was really worried for a bit.
Well, now that you're back, it's back to work, right? So,
exactly. Literally, power's back on, and I have so much to catch up on, and I'm just happy that things can sort of go back to normal for some of us. But yeah, it's been quite a journey.
Goodness, I can't even imagine. That's ugh. Anyway.
Yeah,
why don't we go ahead and talk about you a little bit?
Okay.
So originally from Tacoma, Washington, now you obviously live in Texas now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about childhood a little bit.
Yeah.
Tell me about your family, your kid, what you were like as a kid and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was born in Tacoma, so very close to Seattle. It's one of my a lot of my family there. I grew up around a lot of my mom's side of the family, and a lot of my dad's side of the family lived in Washington, but yeah, my dad was a sergeant major, E9 rank in the Army, and my mom was IT tech, nurse. She did everything. She's awesome. I just grew up in, small blue house in Tacoma, and we moved a lot to different places near family in Washington. And as a kid, I was, obsessed with, Power Rangers. I still am.
Nice.
And I think... what else? I mean, I literally had so many Power Ranger toys, and just I wanted an N64, so I got one, and my brother gave me an NES. So I've always been around pop culture and kind of honestly Japanese culture too for a long time since I can remember, because all I cared about was the really cool anime shows and everything as a kid, Speed Racer, and I watched a lot of Speed Racer growing up, and a lot of Sailor Moon. I had VHS tapes of the original Digimon and Pokemon,
nice,
and all that on VHS tape. So yeah, I literally watched a lot of anime and Japanese animation. But yeah, we
sounds there was a lot of creativity that was going on as a young Kiba.
Oh yeah,
fostered and supported by family, I'd imagine.
Yeah, my family was is very much in the mindset. My dad and mom are still this way, but they're very much in the mindset that whatever I want to do creatively, they're 100% behind, which I'm very fortunate, because not a lot of people have that. And it was very, very. It was very humbling to see that, carried through my teenage years and adulthood, because I realized a lot of people didn't have that. So I wanted to, make the best of what I had and what I was grateful for. And they are my biggest fans. They really are my biggest fans. I didn't really get involved in anything performing arts until I was six anyway. Because my mom, I went to a Christian kindergarten, and so they had a choir there at the school, and the first performance I ever had was I was supposed to be an angel in this choir, and before the performance, I spilled something on my all white, it's a overly big white t-shirt with a tinsel halo above my head, right? So of course I would spill something on the white outfit, and I was just so upset that I didn't even perform. I was a very young diva, apparently. We didn't do that. But then I remember watching my mom sing in her choir, and I was just obsessed with singing at that point. So once my dad my dad also taught ROTC at a bunch of high schools. So he would always move and he'd be like, let's move to another place and let's do this. My job's taking me here. Let's go here. So we moved to California really quickly, like when I turned like 7. So we only stayed in Tacoma for about 6 years before we moved to Palmdale, Los Angeles area in Southern California. And that is where I started really digging into performing arts. Like, I found my love of musical theater music, and, like, I started singing a lot more. And then my mom and dad were like, so apparently, like, all your teachers are bad because you don't pay attention in class, but I'm passing all my classes. Like, I was actually, like, straight-A student still. But yeah. My teachers would be like, oh, well, he doesn't want to stop talking to people, and, like, he doesn't have anything to do because he finishes his work too quickly. yeah, it was a lot of things to get in trouble for. You know, at least it wasn't, like, I was being bad. It was just I was bored. Yeah. And so they were like, they my teacher tried to claim I had, like, ADD. So they took me to a specialist thinking, you know, maybe he does. ADD. And they were like, no, he doesn't. He just needs to be doing something, like, to channel his creative energy. So they put me into dance classes and acting and singing at, like, 10. And wow. From then on, I literally fell in love with performing. And I mean, I was what? We were in California for 5 years, 7 years. Oh, no. Yeah. 7 years at that point. And, I was performing in Los Angeles. I had I was in a boy band. I was in a boy band with, Ross Lynch from, Austin and Ally. Sick. It was fun. We were a bunch of, like, 13-year-olds, you know, just trying our best, trying to get, you know, signed and find a talent agency and singing and dancing. I mean, that video is up on YouTube. I should really post it sometime because it's really good. Like, we were pretty good. I'm not going to lie. We were pretty awesome. But yeah, I did a lot of stuff, auditioning for commercials, and it was just a lot of on-camera stuff. And I think to be honest with you, my childhood with that, we really were burned out pretty quick at a young age because it was just so much, you know, for a 13-year-old to understand, like, going from, like, oh, now we're going to take you out of regular public school and we're going to homeschool and we're going to work from home and then, like, audition in L.A. all the time and you get tired and it just kind of turns into that. So my childhood was really weird. I don't even remember the original question because I went on such a tangent. And maybe there is a bit of ADD there, but you know, yeah, that was me as a kid.
It happens all the time. Well, but what a fun and creative and eclectic and what a, quite honestly, hell of a ride, actually.
Yeah. A lot.
Much more exciting and entertaining and much fulfilling to a degree than, I guess, like, just going through the motions and going through school. And
You know, we had all that. I mean, a lot of the reason why I was homeschooled because I was bullied quite a bit, you know, in public school and to a point where my dad had to get a job at the school just to watch it happen, basically, because the teachers tried to claim it didn't happen. And, you know, he would watch firsthand as these kids would bully me or the teachers would even, like, exclude me from things. Like, teachers did it. And it was quite a wake-up call, I think, because, as you know, as a kid, you don't really understand why teachers are doing things or why kids want to do the things they do or why they're being rude when you're just being yourself, you know. It actually made me, I told my family, I was like, why would I want to keep doing, like, singing? Why would I want to keep dancing if this is how I'm going to be treated? And, you know, my mom and dad were both like, you don't have to, like, the people that mind don't matter and the people that matter don't mind. And I've always stood by that because it really put in perspective to me, even as a kid, like, if I love what I'm doing, then why am I worrying about what other people think about it? Like, if it's making me happy, it's making me successful, it's not hurting anyone, then why let that affect me? So it really kind of put things like, okay, I'm going to go full force into this. And then, you know, of course, that type of damage as a kid doesn't go away overnight. So being put into, like, homeschooling and being isolated and seeing, like, you know, kids at performing arts school only, or, like, seeing friends at, like, you know, like a once a week meetup for homeschooled kids. Like, it's not the same as, like, being involved in a social setting like 24/7.
Yeah.
So you really have to like restructure like your brain to be okay with like, okay, I'm going to go home and just be home all the time and maybe see my friend on the weekend when he doesn't have school and like miss those like opportunities. So I feel like it's like a double-edged sword. I got the great benefit of like being able to go for auditions and do all this stuff. But at the same time, I kind of missed a part of my elementary, middle school, childhood years that were like actually, you know, in person with friends and building a like social friends. Circle of my own that's not like at a studio. So, yeah.
My goodness. I mean, so glad you're here, obviously.
Thank you. At the same time,
like, I'm sorry. That sucks. Gosh.
Yeah. I mean, you know, things happen for a reason, I believe. So, you know, it is what it is, and it's unfortunate, and I wish we had a way. I'm a big advocate for, like, anti-bullying and all that kind of stuff, and I wish there was some way to just, like, teach kids, you know, from now on, just be like, look, like, be kind. That's all we gotta say, be kind. So you never know who's going through what. So, yeah.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because that idea of I'm going to do what I want to do because it makes me happy and not care about other people's opinions are or what their influence may be, isn't this thing concept that hit me until I was in my early 30s. Mm-hmm. And of course, varying people will have that revelation at different points in their lives. But for it to happen so early to you in your life, do you think that somehow fueled or supported your pursuit in the creative arts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, once I realized that it was about like what was making me happy rather than believing kind of like having to fit into what other people thought, once I figured that out, it kind of skyrocketed into a different form. Like I, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, I'm going to be in TV and movies and I'm going to be like a singer on stage. And then, you know, we moved from California after all that toxic, you know, environment stuff, and moved to Reno, Nevada for my, like, that's where I was, like, basically raised. Like, I will say, like, you know, born in Washington, raised a bit in California. Like, I went to, like, high school, college, everything in Reno. So when I got there, you know, we made the choice to put me back in public school because I was, like, I'm about to be a freshman in high school. I don't really want to spend my like high school years being homeschooled. I don't want to do that. And I said, you know, and I made the right choice because the school I went to luckily became a performing arts magnate. And like they changed all the structures of all the high schools in the county. So each school had their own like topic that they were specialized in. And my school that was right next to my house that I went to turned into the performing arts school. So I was introduced to theater. And I was introduced to, like, musicals and, like, all that kind of stuff and dance team. And I was really able to channel my creative energy without people judging me because, you know, luckily this school, like, they – at first when I first moved there, I was in such the L.A. mindset that I had to be a certain way that everyone's like – everyone's like, why are you dressed like that and why are you, like – you know. And I'm like, oh, I don't have to dress up all the time? Beautiful.
Right.
So I ended up, you know, I'd come into class the first day with, like – the look that they gave me, because in LA back in 2005 through 8, it was all about like create a look. That's what your marketing look is, and that's what you have to be. Especially if you like you want to be on Disney or Nickelodeon, you got to have a look. So I came in with like you know LA vest, like shorts, chain wallets, like fingerless gloves. It was a lot for like a you know a Reno high school where kids are like. Look, we have, like, horses, and, you know, it was funny to me, and I just was like, I don't have to do this anymore, and so I started, like, really figuring out who I was, and I found my love for rock music, I started, like, really discovering who I was as a person, and I was enjoying theater, so, like, and nobody judged me, they were like, you're, like, this is awesome that you do this, you're really good at what you do, And yeah, and that was where, you know, the 4 years. And then when I turned 18, you know, that's when I discovered voice acting as a possibility. And I was kind of like, again, that story is It's funny because I never, you know, obviously I've watched anime, I've watched cartoons, I've watched,
right.
I've played video games. I understood that there were people voicing these characters. However, what I didn't connect the dots for some reason was like, oh my gosh, like that is actually a job I could do. Right. And yeah, it really, that, I mean, if you want me to tell that story, I can, but it really, it really changed kind of and spiraled and I didn't expect it to do where I am today because of it. But, yeah, my friend came up to me and was like, hey, so I know you sing, I know you do all the acting and stuff, but I'm doing, he ran like a fan blog. Like they used to do the Ask blogs on Tumblr where you take the character from a show or a game, you'd get the character and people would ask questions and then you would answer those as the character. And, my friend was like, yeah, I'm doing one. And I think I really need someone to play Simon from Gurren Lagann. And I was like, okay, cool. And they were like, so I want you to do it. And I said, what do you mean? I don't know. And they're like, well, here's the voice clip. And I was like, I know who Simon is. But I was kind of like, okay. I was like, I don't know if I can do that. And like, no, but like, trust me, like you definitely can. Your voice is high enough. Like, just give it a try.
Yeah.
So I ended up doing it and it was like, it didn't even come through, but I remember I was like, oh my God, like I actually sound like a younger like kid. And I was like, huh? And I was like, okay. And so that same friend and I and my ex at the time all went to a convention in Sacramento. And you know, I was already into the cosplay scene and kind of like the local convention. I was helping out as staff. Like I run sound. I ran the karaoke room at my local convention. So I was working like as a side job, like doing that. And so I never even like paid attention to any of the voice actors at the show. I'm a big Kingdom Hearts fan. And so like, you know, there were a couple people that came that were in Kingdom Hearts that were there. And I was like, oh, that's cool. That's awesome that they're here. Yeah. And I never like went to go see them. I was like, okay, back to work. And so I went to this convention and I said, you know what? I'm going to go to some panels. I'm going to go, you know, when I go get stuff signed, I'm just going to, instead of being like, okay, you signed it, bye. I just want to ask a couple questions. And so I remember I was waiting in line for Miley Flanagan and Kylie Bear. I went in and I, you know, talked to Kyle a bit because I was like, oh, you voice Kiba. That's like my favorite character. Like, oh my gosh. And I tried not to freak out because I was like, let me compose myself. I'm going to like,
right.
I was like, let me make sure that I'm presenting myself in a way that's not like freaking out. And so I met Miley and she was wonderful. And she had asked about me and my partner and we're like, oh, are you two dating? Like, yeah. And she talked about her life and it was just like a real connection between people. And so she's like, come to this Naruto panel. Like, it'll be really fun. So I went to the panel and I was just mesmerized. I didn't even ask any questions. I just sat there and like watched these actors. It was like Liam O'Brien, Kylie Bear, Miley Flanagan. Who else was on that panel? Yeah, there was a couple of various Naruto actors and they just started going through like doing like people come up and course ask like, oh, can you do this in this voice? And watching people in front of you just flip a switch and seeing like the voice come out of the shows that I was like obsessed with. I was like, that is so cool to me. And they talked about like how to do efforts and like people like, how do you do all this stuff in like the booth? And like, how does recording work? You know, the typical questions. And I just found myself like the minute I got home, I said, okay, listen, I was like, Christmas is coming up. I don't want like, I asked for a new guitar and I was like, I really want a mic. I want a mic and I want to be able to record stuff for YouTube. And so it was for me to like make vocal covers. So I was like, cool, I can sing, but I can also audition for stuff and practice. Yeah. And so like they got my parents were like, okay, if that's what you want to do, they didn't understand because I had spent, you know, 20 years almost or like 18 years most on music. Like that was all I wanted to do. I started auditioning on behindthevoiceactors.com. And
nice.
My profile, which by the way, I now finally have like my own page on on there, which is a really yes. surreal moment for me. Because I was like looking the other day and my profile is still up. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, I saw that they added Cautious Hero onto my page, which I was like, okay, interesting choice. Yeah, I have a page, but I would audition for everything. You know, I would audition for like little audiobooks, comic dubs, like just to practice. And finally, I just kind of like found a bunch of original projects on there. You know, I worked with Reese Bridger through that later. And then you know, a couple of animation projects for YouTube. And then I found Voice Acting Alliance when it was alive and well. And that was when I met Reese Bridger there. And I auditioned for his show Zulaplex back in the day. And, you know, I started working like in this indie scene and it just kind of took off from there. And it's a crazy wild ride how Tumblr started that.
Wow. I mean, that's talk about a domino effect. Just mm-hmm. one thing leading to the next. but you haven't actually given up on the whole music thing. You're not exclusively a voice actor. Yeah. Tell me about your musical pursuits of today.
Yeah, absolutely. Back in like 2016, I released my first album as me, and I worked it completely in my booth. Like during the time I was pursuing voice acting, by that point, I had recorded for a couple of things, like indie games and a lot of Steam games and like YouTube animations and nothing like major, some visual novels. And I think I had just recorded Earthlock Festival of Magic. I booked that and I recorded it and I sent it off. And then I realized how big that game was. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I'll have Beyond the Consoles for the first time. That's really surreal. I remember I got all this energy and I was like, I'm going to write my album finally. And so I sat in my booth that my dad and I built into my closet and just went on GarageBand and made like 12 beats and like instrumentals. And I was writing music and lyrics and I recorded it all and mastered and mixed it all from home. And so I mixed it all. And then once I was done, I sent it off and got it put on Spotify and stuff and iTunes at the time. And I just started because I just recently also had a band that I did throughout high school, and we toured all over Reno and like parts of California.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, we were 17-year-olds playing shows at bars. We were the only ones that were allowed to do that because we were good, apparently. Because you know, like 21 and up, and then like you can only stay on stage if you perform here. And we're like, oh, okay. So we literally would be like, perform, people would love our set, and then we just have to be like backstage the whole time. So we broke up the band like right after high school. I graduated, and then I was like, I'm gonna work on my music. And I released it. I started doing shows around town at the clubs that were 18 and up, and I performed with like background dancers, and I booked money, and I was like, I'm gonna sell and like save all this money up for other stuff that I need. And then I kind of gave music a break for a bit. I started a channel where I did covers, Kiba covers on YouTube, and I really didn't do anything with it until I moved to Texas. During that time, I really like put out a bunch of content. Like I was adapting Japanese songs into English. I was putting my original music up and doing musical theater covers and like actually recording videos and learning how to edit. And I kind of got burned out really quick because I was like, oh, I'm going to do a Patreon and I'm going to do a video once a day. So like 7 videos a week. I was like, that's not going to happen. So I was doing that, but it was not good. I said, nope, I can't do this. So I took a break from that. And when I started doing drag, I kind of got the inspiration to do music again. And so I just released an album last Halloween. As Salem Moon, and that to me was like, okay, I can now write music again and feel like it's actually not just forced, and it was fun, and people love the music that they're hearing, and I have people downloading it and, you know, Shazamming it, and whenever I'm at a show, they're like, oh my god, like, you have such a great voice, like, do you have music? And I'll be like, yes, here we go. So I wrote all that from in my booth here in Texas and recorded it in my booth and posted it. And you know, I worked with four producers for some of the songs that make the instrumental, and they mixed it for me. But other than that, it was all me. It's just been a really cool musical endeavor. I mean, on top of that, I did a bunch of musical theater before lockdown, like here in Texas. So I'm, you know, ready for that to happen again so I can get back on stage. But, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is, indeed. And and I just want to take a quick moment here to recognize and to and to celebrate the idea that, like, you did you didn't wait for someone to give you permission to just do it.
Yeah.
Like, you had an idea, you research, I'm sure you did plenty of research, and but you took steps and actively went after it without, like, oh, what about this or what about that? As I coach various colleagues and just keep my eye on the community, if you will, that issue seems to be like a plague. I want to do this, but X, Y, and Z, and I'm waiting for somebody to tell me that I should do this. Oh, why? I think you should just do it.
Yeah, I think life is way too short to wait for someone to tell you how to live your life. And I think life is way too short to let opportunities pass you by. And, you know, you definitely miss 100% of the opportunities you don't take. And I teach as well, because I used to teach at a bunch of performing arts, like, you know, training schools and some conservatories. So what I tell my students, too, is, like, at the end of the day, what are you here to do? And they're like, well, I want to be an actor. I want to be a singer. I want to be a dancer. I'm like, okay, you have to be able to put in the work for yourself. You can't put in the work for other people and hope that they give you something. You have to put in the work for yourself, because what will happen is when you start improving your best self and you start putting your best foot forward and what you want to do and showcase yourself, people that want to give you that opportunity will give you the opportunity. But if you wait for, like, this person, or you say, oh, what if this happens? The what ifs don't exist. What does exist is right now. And right now is the best time to just seize the day and go forward. And, you know, I'm so proud of a lot of my kids and a lot of my students that I've worked with over the years. And they remind me a lot of the times that I have to do the same, you know. You know, they say, you know, Mr. Kiva, you practice what you preach. And I'm like, you're right. And I'm my biggest, you know, my biggest critic. And I'm the person that really beats myself down the most. But I always say, like, they remind me that, you know, you have to be able to put in the work, but you also have to not be afraid to take the first step. And they really, really showcase that, and they've helped me remind myself that all the time.
And look at you, now the president and COO of an animation company.
Yeah, it's
called
crazy.
Ascendant Animation. Tell me about that. How did that come about?
I mean, so, you know, really to this day, it's just still crazy to me that that this is a thing. So 10 years ago, when I was 16, I was working as a staff member at a convention. And I was running karaoke, I believe, and I was running tech. So this convention was 24 hours, so it ran for all 3 days, like, nonstop. So I was I was up, like, really late on these days. And luckily they were weekends, so my parents were like, whatever, like, you're not a bad kid, so just do what you want. Cool. So I would just be up, and there was always a guest at these conventions, at this convention, because, you know, they were one of the popular ones. It was Steve Nunez or Worky the Chocobo. Steve would just be, like, super popular. He'd do concerts, and he'd do all these panels about BL and stuff. And I would watch sometimes, and we became friends really quick because we just have the same humor. And he writes parody music, and he's a musician. And I was like, oh, my God, he's really good. He's just a really nice guy. So I've known him for, like, a long time. You know, when I turned 18, I started doing voiceover. He was the first person I talked to kind of, like, pick his brain since I knew him. And then I was a guest at a convention. I was guest at my own convention that I would been staff at 2 years, I think a year into my voiceover stuff. Because I was in, like, a staff meeting and they were like, so who do we want as guests? And I suggested a couple of people. I was like, well, I've met these people. I can reach out to you for them since, you know, I've been talking to them. And then I was like, also, I do voiceover work. I know I don't have anything, but if you need a guest that, you know, just to fill a space, like, I'll do it. And they were like, let me see your credits. And I already had like 15 credits at that point that were original. And so they were like, yeah, let's do it. So they put me on the spot and said, okay, you're going to be a guest at this convention. So once I was on the guest panel, you know, I was like, Worky, you got to help me. I don't know what I'm doing. I've never done this before. And so he really did. He walked me through like how it works and like, you know, helped me through this. So we talked about it and like, think like 4 years into or 5 years into knowing each other. We went to a convention in Utah called Anime Bonsai. And we were both guests. Cause at this point, whenever Worky booked a convention, I was most likely there too. And I had been building up my credits. So like I had done some original visual novels. I had done some video games and I had done like a bunch of stuff that people were talking about. And, so we went to this convention. We were in his hotel room before the show, I think on the Thursday night. And, cause at this time I was like watching a bunch of Crunchyroll. And I told him, we had always been talking about like, man, one day we're going to do anime. Because he had never done anime. I hadn't done it yet. And I was like, one day we're going to do this. And I was like, hey, have you seen this show called Ishida and Asakura? And I literally showed him the show. And we were laughing so hard in the hotel room, just watching the sub because it didn't have a dub. And it was just the stupidest, fun show in the world. Slapstick comedy, like ridiculous at its finest. And we were just laughing about it. And we were like, man, someday this needs to get a dub. So fast forward, like, you know, what? let me think of when that was. Like, I guess 4 years later, 5 years later. 5 years, I guess, because it was last year during pandemic. So 5 years pass and Worky calls me and he works with Ubiquity Entertainment and they are like a whole, you know, TV, film, everything company in Los Angeles and New York. And he was like, hey, question for you. So my boss wants to start this animation subsidiary like company with Ubiquity called Ascendant. And so we were talking and we were trying to think of people that would be the best fit for certain roles. And your name came up because, you know, we had worked together for a long time. Kevin has seen your stuff and he wanted people that know anime, you know, and like how things should work firsthand. And he's like, so apparently he's like, so would you be willing to take the position as we start? And so I was kind of like, I'm half asleep probably at this point, I think. I was, like, just waking up because he was calling me 30 times. And I was like, so you're telling me right now that you want me to you want me to run an animation company? And so he was like, yeah, I'll be the CEO, and you can be the president and COO. And then we just pick an anime because he wants one. And he said, we'll get like the funding, like figure it out. And so I was like, okay, cool. So I was like, what do we want to dub? And he's like, I don't know. And I was like, weird thought.
That one.
I was like, weird thought. I was like, what if we did Ishida and Asakura? And he's like, oh my God, that would be perfect because it's short. It'd be fun, like a little test run. But like, we genuinely like, it's so funny. Like, why would it not get a dub? So we were in a mindset of like, okay, all of this on paper looks great. However, we still have to get the license and we still have to talk and negotiate. We were literally like, okay, we ask a bunch of companies, we reach out, we set up business meetings, which we did. And we were like, they're not going to want to do this. We're a new company. Like, why would they want to work with us right away? So, think 2 days after we emailed YTE, they emailed us back and said, hi, we would love to talk about, you know, Ishida and Asakura. Like, what do you have in mind? And so Worky and I were like, okay, so this is happening.
It's happening.
We talked to YTE back and forth. I would be up until like 5 or 6 in the morning some nights just waiting for responses because, you know, time difference. And so I'd reply and we'd talk back and forth. And finally, they were like, okay, here's a contract. And we were like, all right. And then they sent us the show and then the raw scripts. And I ended up, adapting the scripts into English. And we were just sitting there. And like when we cast the show, we then realized like we're doing an anime right now. Like we're actually like legally, professionally doing an anime from home remotely. So, you know, I went out and I was like, okay, I don't want to use... You know, I want to use people that I know. And this was a thing from the beginning for him and I. We wanted to give the people an opportunity that never would get an opportunity normally because of where they lived or because of, you know, they need a resume or they have to have an agent. And we were like, we have the power and the ability right now to really help some of these people get their foot in the door. And we still did auditions and we still did that, but most of the cast were people of unknowns. And that's what, you know, Anime News Network found out, it was funny because it kind of got announced accidentally that we were dubbing it. Because our boss, our higher up boss, announced like the new staff for Ascendant. And then he had put in there like in a little bit, it was like a one sentence thing. It was like, oh, like, yeah, they're going to be working on the dub of Ishida and Asakura. And so I was like, okay, I'll share it to my Twitter. And Anime News Network, like, sleuthed that. They, like, put the magnifying glass in and said, dub. And then they made an article saying Ascendant Animation is dubbing Ishida and Asakura. So then everybody was freaking out. And so at that point, we're like, okay, that's been announced. So we were talking to the cast and all the people that were doing Walla and additional voices. And we were like, hey, so just expect to announce it soon because it's spreading like wildfire. And, you know, at Toonami Hub and a bunch of different places were then asking me, like, how did this happen? Like, talk to us about Ascendant. Talk to us about how you did this. And it was just a whirlwind of like questions. And even colleagues that I was working with at Funimation and all that and like Sentai were like, hey, what? They were like, what is this? And I said, I don't know myself right now. There's a lot happening. It's kind of like Jumanji. Something else is happening. I feel like if it's someone else's, I feel like it's really weird right now. And then we dubbed the show fully remotely from home, you know, and put it together and Warky engineered it and I directed it. I wrote it and we did it and we watched it and we were like, oh my gosh, like this is done. We did it. And we sent it off to get DVDs printed, which were because of COVID, it's really hard to nail a release date on the show because California's been opening and closing every day. So hopefully soon everybody will get a chance to hear the full dub and watch it. But we sent the DVDs to some of our cast members and like our crew. And, you know, it was for me. It wasn't about like getting the dub done. Like it was great. I had a great time working on it and I love that I have that as under my belt. But it, to me, it was seeing like people like Dom in Australia and Reese in UK that were like, I never thought I'd be an anime. And now like that door has been opened for me and seeing their name on like the back of a DVD case and like people that have never like had the chance because they live in like, you know, in Florida or they live in like Iowa or something like that. You know, they don't live in the magnet states or the places that does voiceover. Seeing how happy they were to be a part of it, even if it was background voices or just this one line thing, that was for me really cool. We did that. And then we were like, okay, next one. This one was like, stressful because the company really wanted us to do it and it was just a lot of conversation, a lot of days of silence. And when we got Titan's Bride, working, are like, oh my god, this is a 2020 show. Like this came out this year. And we're like, cool. So now lo and behold, you know, we announced that we're dubbing Titan's Bride and people are also like, oh my gosh, like we're going to continue doing this. So it's very exciting. And Ascendant has been a really cool blessing in disguise for me. It's really, really, really awesome. So yeah, that's how Ascendant kind of became a thing.
My gosh. Reese yesterday received his DVD in the mail.
Yes, he did.
And made a post. And maybe people don't know who Reese Bridger is. How could you not know, first of all? But at the same time, like, there's so much gratitude and appreciation and fascination that you can just really feel from the words that, that's coming out of his Twitter profile. It's insane.
Well, it's Reese. And Reese, I've known for a long time. Like I said, he was one of the first people to give me a chance in my voiceover career. You know, I was cast as Mike originally in Zulaplex, and I did 2 seasons of work with him. And he was the one who would audition me for stuff, and he'd send me, and like we're still very good friends. You know, we've had our ups and downs as people do. But Reese was someone I always, like, I told him, I was like, one day I'm going to be able to repay you for what you've done for me. And putting him in Ishida Asakura was like, first of all, he was great in his audition, but also like I wanted to give him that chance because he'd given me the chance. And and I still don't, like, I still have so much that I owe him in gratitude and everything. I still feel to this day, and he may not think so, but I feel like I have to. And he, like, it's just, there's so much I want to still do for him. And it was just really cool to see that he was so grateful and so excited when he got his DVD, because I think he's very talented and he's a very hardworking individual. And he's just one of the most driven people that I know. I agree with you. Just reading his tweet, I was very excited about seeing him excited.
It's a really wonderful, what goes around comes around, the give and take and just gratitude and happiness repaying itself round and round and round. And, I wish more people acted and proceeded with their business in this journey in that fashion of being considerate and kind and inclusive. And I'm sitting here applauding Kiba Walker. Just, you know, like, amazing. Amazing.
Thank you.
And that idea of I'm going to do what I want to do and perform as I want to continues on to you being a drag performer.
Yes. Now,
this is one area that I do not have much knowledge about.
Yeah,
I was talking to Nick the other day, who is also a drag performer. I had no idea. And then he showed me this video of this one drag performer in this performance, in this theater, like splits in the heels and this acrobatics. I'm like, whoa!
Yep.
Wow. Okay. So first and foremost, I want you to walk us through what it's like to perform as a drag performer, and just I don't know. Give us your perspective, your view, the definition, whatever it means.
Yeah, of course. I actually did a show last night. It's become my second full-time job, basically. I perform as drag. I didn't think that would also be, like, voiceover to me had become so first nature that I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. Drag didn't come around until right before I moved to Texas, because I was watching RuPaul's Drag Race. And I was, like, really fascinated with, like, how they would, like, construct things and, like, how they could transform their entire look with makeup. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, they're singing, they're dancing, they're acting, they're doing everything that I can do. And it's just like they create a character. And I always tell people that don't understand drag, I'm like, drag is basically creating a character persona and living like a double life as them. And it's just, and it's like, think of it like, you know, David Bowie and Prince and all these, you put on all this theatrics when they're on stage, when they were on stage, and they transform their looks and they would change how they look and they change their name sometimes and they create characters like Ziggy Stardust or, you know, the symbol formerly known as Prince. It's like, they were doing drag in a way, because drag, like when we are born, we don't have clothes. We don't have a set idea of who we are. And RuPaul says it best, is like, you know, we're all born naked and the rest is drag. And, you know, even as a person who's not doing a drag performance, you are doing drag by walking around and presenting yourself in the style and the fashion that you want to be presented as. So drag originally was a form of protest, you know, back with Stonewall, you know, they did the ball culture, and it was a really great place for, you know, people of color and, you know, LGBT youth to really express themselves. So for me, drag became like a quick history lesson, kind of in the pride culture that I, you know, was trying to get more involved in. And so I moved to Texas. I was doing voice work and blah, blah, blah. And I did musical theater for a bit. And one of my friends that was in a show with me was getting ready for a drag show. And he's like, I'm going to S4 in, you know, in Dallas, and we're going to do a show. And I was like, I want to do that. That'd be fun. And so they gave me, they're like, get stuff together and I'll help you with makeup and we'll do it. So I was put in drag and I went out and did the show, and it was awful. It was like, and it was funny because I came in so confident. I was like, I've been performing my whole life. I should be able to do this just fine. And like, I tripped over my own heel, like,
oh god,
costumes malfunctioned. It was awful. But I was like, that was fun. Like, people still tipped me. Like, I got $11 out of it. So then I finally started working, with a group called North Texas Drag Bingo. And we were doing charity work. We'd play bingo and then raise money for charity. So it was fun. And I would do drag performances. And I created Salem because I had a bunch of different names and they were all awful. And my friend was like, well, what's your drag name when you come in? And I was like thinking, I'm like, okay, I can't. I was like, I don't know what it could be. And I was like, Salem, Salem. And I was like, I like Salem. And I was like, Salem Moon, like Sailor Moon, except Salem, which is a name. And I was like, okay, cool. Perfect. So I just went with it and didn't think it would stick. And then I just liked how it sounded. And eventually I did a bunch of drag bingo performances. That was the only place I would do drag. It was like once a month. And so finally some other people saw me and were like, hey, like, come do this talent night over at this bar. And so I was like, okay, cool. So I sang, and I figured, I was like, wait, I don't have to lip sync. I can sing. And so I started singing at shows, and people were like, oh, like, you can sing. And I was like, yeah. And it was cool because I've always been more attracted to female singers and like how they write music and how their voice sounds. So like, I was very inspired by like Heart and Paramore and, you know, Joan Jett and, you know, Diana Ross, Whitney Houston, like all these great singers. And, I was like, I'm just going to do those type of songs 'cause I can sing them. And people were just like, what? Who are you? And so eventually it just kind of spiraled into like, I was getting bookings and they were paying me, and it was paying more than my regular job. I just started like building up this persona of Salem. And I remember I was doing a show, and there's a bar in Fort Worth called Urban Cowboy Saloon, and they did a show called The Three, and it's a competition show. And I don't know if you know, there's a voice, like a singing competition called The Four on like NBC or something, or it's like ABC, I don't know, Fox maybe, but it's like there's four judges, or there's like four performers, and they hold a chair, and singers come every week and try to take one of the chairs so they get to the finale and win the show. And so The Three is basically that, but drag, and you can do whatever you want. So I remember I saw it and I was just like, I'm going to audition. I'm probably not going to get in. So I sent an email and immediately I was put on the cast, and I was like, okay. So we filmed the promo. I had to like put together this look for this promo video, and I was like, I don't know what to do. And, I went through the competition. I like did a bunch of stuff and pushed myself, and I won the season. I got the cash prize and the crown, and it was surreal to me because I was like, I just won this competition. And to me, that was the moment I was like, okay, maybe drag is more successful for me than I thought. And I just started doing, like, with that win, I was able to do a bunch of shows at different places, and I was booking shows here and there. It was when the pandemic hit, because everything closed, right? Like, bars closed, you know, restaurants closed, like places where I was performing. I lost all that income immediately. And I had quit my job before that, because I was like, I'm doing voiceover enough and drag enough that I can pay my bills with this. Yeah. Like, I was making enough to pay my rent, my electric, my internet, and food. And that was it. So I was like, and have extra money still to like live and do whatever I need to. So I quit my job. I was a manager at GameStop. I was with GameStop for 7 years. I was managing stores in Dallas and stuff. And I quit and I said, I'm done. I'm going to perform and I'm going to spend my effort and time and really grind to make myself successful without having to be in retail. And pandemic hit, and I was scared. I was like, I don't know what to do. So instead of like saying, okay, I guess that I'm going to find a job and like breathe and like, you know, focus on trying to make sure we make ends meet, I was like, okay, I can still do drag virtually. And so I built a platform called on my Twitch channel for Salem, and it was called The Coven, and it was a drag show, but virtual. And so I booked four queens a week, four kings or queens, and I did digital drag shows, and I'd take, you know, ask special guests from like Dragula and RuPaul's Drag Race to come on, and they agreed. So it became this popular thing where we'd basically, I'd host live. I'd be in full drag at my desk with lighting and a green screen and be like, hey, welcome. Let's see the next entertainer to the virtual stage and like do this whole thing. And virtually people tipped. We did a $10 cover at the door and people paid the $10 to come in. So when you have 50 viewers paying a $10 cover, that's $500. I can pay other people. And the thing is I never took any of the money for myself. I paid the entertainers instead. So I wasn't making any money off of it, but I built a platform for all these entertainers. And then what happened was that during quarantine, I had to continue building my drag. So I was fixing my makeup. I was getting wigs. I was being able to like style my own stuff to a point where I became like a completely different person. Like there's a picture of a before and after quarantine. And it's like what I look like now in drag is completely different than the 2 months before with quarantine. And so I built a competition show that was watched every week, and things started opening up at limited capacity immediately. Bookings. I started doing more stuff. And then it became like in December of last year, I did 23 shows.
Oh my gosh.
In like person, virtually all of it. And
oh my gosh,
I did a show in Missouri. I just recently did a show in Arizona. So like, yeah, it became really part of my life that I was like, okay, I guess this is it now. So, yeah, it's just crazy to think that that happened, and it was all because, like, I just kind of got thrown in last minute to some friend's, like, show, and then pandemic hit, and I really built my drag character because, again, voiceover studios weren't doing full remote yet. So right. I didn't even have that work. So it was just really crazy to see, like, I've developed two careers for myself where in the day I can do a session, like I have a session today, right? And then later tonight, you know, I have to, or tomorrow night I'm performing at a show. So it's crazy. It's a lot. Drag has really become a really cool outlet for me, and it allowed me to make my new album. Like, it opened more doors for me than I thought it would. So, yeah.
It's a really interesting story of Kiva Walker, the producer, and Kiva Walker, the performer.
Yeah.
I imagine that's a really precarious balance that you have to maintain to an extent. How does that work?
I mean, it to me, a lot of people when I was doing, like, I was asking a lot of theaters, like, I want to direct shows. People are like, but you're so young, like, you shouldn't be directing anything yet. Like, not because I was too young, but because, like, you should be performing. Like, do more stuff that you want to do. And I was like, I get that. But I personally don't want to do that when it comes to theater much. Like, I love it. The process is fun. Like, I'll audition for a show if it's something I really love. But most of the time, like, my creative juices, like, I feel more are attuned to, like, directing and producing. I like creating stuff that, and, like, you know, building a vision with people rather than being, like, told what my vision should be. And so I love that aspect of it. So being a producer of things, you have to find a fine line of like, okay, what would I do if I were performing in this and someone else was doing it? What choices would I want to make? And then also being like, okay, what would be a general, like, objectively, what would be a good way to go about this? And then you add your creative juices in. The balance is really weird because there's times where like, okay, I'm doing all this stuff for other people. I'm like, oh God, I have to do stuff for myself and also talk to these people really quick. 1 second. Like there was a time period when I was working on Ascendant, like I wasn't auditioning for anything for myself because I was so busy writing scripts and directing and planning and, you know, scheduling people to come in and making sure the flaps worked and like working with Worky on that. And I was like, I need to audition for more stuff. Like I haven't auditioned for anything in quite a bit. And so I started doing that again, and I was like, oh, wait, I still have some stuff to work on, too. Crap. So it was like, it's a weird balance, but I feel like I've got a hang of it now, at least.
a pendulum that swings back and forth continuously, yeah, I'd imagine.
Exactly.
My goodness. What's life in Texas like, aside from the terrible storm that just passed, of course, but you've been there for quite some time now. How do you find it better? How do you find it? I don't know, better, worse than Tacoma, LA, so on and so forth?
Yeah, I think I didn't think I would be in Texas. When I was younger, my dad is originally from Fort Worth. So like, you know, we visited once when I was younger and I was like, you know, Texas seems like an okay place. I don't really care to be here. But when I moved here, I actually quickly liked it. I still do. I love the area. I love, you know, the people I've met and people I've worked with. And, you know, the weather's less than desirable. I mean, Reno was bipolar weather. This is like a whole nother situation. Like, we literally had that snowstorm and then immediately it was 80 degrees. And then... and then an oil train or like an oil rig and a train collided the other night. And so there was a fire. So I was like, things are on fire. And then they were just in, and they were just frozen. So I don't get it. It's weird. But no, I think, Dallas and Texas, like it shows me like, cause for me, you know, everything was here. GameStop's like headquarters is in Dallas. And like some of the best drag performing places like bars and everything are in Dallas, and you know, Funimation and, you know, and Sentai in Texas. So it was like, okay, I have to adjust to this. And it was like a mini LA for me. And I felt like it was a good point because it allows me to like really like build up what I want to do and like, you know, wet my feet a little bit more on a more professional side and kind of learn the ins and outs on a different level. Without having to spend an exorbitant amount of money living in LA right away. and that's been really helpful. And I've been, it's my fourth year being here now. And in the 4 years that I've been here, I've accomplished more than I thought I would ever would. And it's just crazy to think that like 4 years ago, I didn't even have, you know, I had one background role for anime under my belt. And now I have a list of stuff that I'm in and some exciting stuff coming up soon, which I can't wait to have everyone to see. But yeah, it's life here is actually really nice. I just, you know, it's a culture shift. You come from Washington to going to California, to going to Reno, to Texas is like four different things. And yeah, I just think it's been a really fun journey to explore that.
Speaking of fun journeys that we're looking back here, what are some memorable? I don't want to say favorite because that's not fair. But what are some memorable roles that you've done so far?
I would say if we're going to kind of go in a sort of chronological order, getting to do Mike in Zulaplex was pretty good for me because it was the first time that I got like a really big recurring character that was a part of the jokes and a part of this podcast, this you know, series, this audio series. That really helped me gain some confidence there and try a lower bit of my range rather than trying to do character voices. And then I would say definitely Earthlock Festival of Magic. That was the first time I voiced two lead characters in a video game. And that were on the cover and on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. Nah. So that was, like, really big for me. And then I would say definitely after that for sure was Camp Buddy. And that's been, like, the world of BL and visual novels has been so kind to me. But, like, that was the first time, like, I was like, oh my gosh, like this game is much bigger than a lot of people think it was. Like now it's like TikTok famous and people are always still sharing it and it's getting a new DLC soon. So like, yeah, it was really cool. And that character for me was like the first time at conventions, like people were like, oh my God, like I loved you in this. So that was really cool. Working with Athmel on Minecraft Diaries and, you know, Phoenix Drop High School. That was big because that when I was out in that, like the next day, my YouTube and my Twitter was just blowing up. Like people were subscribing and following and it was like nonstop. And I was like, what is happening right now? I reached like, I think like 1,000 followers in a day. It was crazy. And that was when I started like really working on my Twitter. But I would say like anime wise, definitely Saint Seiya. Working as being Skila Io in Saint Seiya was a really memorable thing for me because I love Saint Seiya, and when I got the call that I was going to be in Saint Seiya, I was like really, really excited. Because, you know, that's a big part of anime history. And then definitely my first named role at Funimation, in Junji Ito collection as Scano. That was awesome for me because I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm only been here for like a year, maybe year and a half. And like, I have my named role, even if it's for one episode, it's still cool. And, that was awesome. And I think, yeah, like I, there's one role that's super memorable that I can't talk about yet. Soon people will hear what it is and you'll see it on Twitter and you'll know what I'm talking about. But there's one that definitely, like, when I walked into the booth remotely, I was like, oh my gosh, I really can't believe I'm doing this right now. And I'm just so excited for everyone to hear it. But yeah, I think those have been some really cool moments, but I love all of my roles. Like, they're all my babies and they're all my favorites and most memorable. All of them, I remember each one. But yeah, definitely those would be like the most memorable. Wow.
Yeah. How fun. I can't. The way you're talking about life and work and so much fun. And I think the listeners can definitely agree with me. We can hear the fun in your voice. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun. So
how fulfilling and rich and gosh, what goals. I seriously, goals right there. Thank you. It's brilliant. All right. So, well, the following questions are questions I ask everybody.
Okay.
I want to first start off with what's ahead. Okay. Of Kiba Walker and Ascendant Animation from here on. I typically ask this towards the end, but now that we know a little bit about where you came from and what you've done and where you are now, what's next for Kiba? What's next for Ascendant? And where are we going with this?
Yeah. Ascendant-wise, we have a lot of stuff planned like we want to achieve. And it's going to take time, of course. You know, we only started months ago. But we're making good progress and, you know, Titan's Bride is going to come out. We'll have the cast announcement hopefully soon for that. You know, that show will be fun. I think it'll be a big step for the LGBT community and the BL scene to have a mainstream BL be dubbed. And Ishinasa Curl will be coming out soon. We're really trying to make sure that it's, you know, done with the right people and out safely. But there's a lot of plans we have for Ascendant. That we cannot wait to share with you. As for me, like I said, I've got a lot of announcements coming up that I can't wait to talk about. And for me, my biggest goals right now is just to continue building what I have and continue working until another call comes in. Because, you know, no one's perfect and you have to keep working yourself to make sure that you are the best well-oiled machine that you got. And so my goal is I would love to be a lead in an anime. I've had a lot of side and minor characters and named characters that I'm really grateful for, but there's that still in the back of my head. I'm like, I want to be a lead. I want to work on like all 12 episodes and be there and like, and be a part of that process and see what it's like to do these long, long, long sessions. And then I would love to be able to like write more for Funimation. I would love to write for Funimation as a script writer. That would be great. And hopefully one day, you know, make a move to LA again and try it as an adult. Cause as a kid, you know, you got limited resources, you got what your parents tell you to do. And, now that I have a lot of knowledge and 20 years of working of like entertainment in general, I really want to just go and take a dive and see what happens, but that probably won't happen until, you know, things are safe with pandemic and stuff. Cause I don't want to move to another state and like immediately put in lockdown. Like I'd rather be where I'm at and then be like, okay, it's safe. Cool. We're going to move. But yeah, I think I really want to continue building my brand, and I really want people to know that, like, anything is possible. I know it sounds cheesy, but, like, obviously, like, anything is possible. You just got to put in the work and discipline yourself in a positive and reinforcing way to be able to create what your vision is. And I've been doing that. I'm very happy with where I'm at. Like, I am very happy, and I'm very grateful for every opportunity. A lot of people sometimes have a misconception with how I am. Like, my thing is that, like, a lot of people think that I, like, can be cocky sometimes or overconfident, or why am I doing this? People don't get a chance to talk to me like you are right now. I come off a certain way because I don't realize it. It's just how my brain works. And I catch myself more and more because of Cole. He's really helped me in the past few years. Cole Fiker, and he really has helped me discover, like, hey, like, sometimes you come off a certain way, and I'm like, oh, that's not my intention at all. And we're human. Like, we can't fix things or adjust things if we don't know. And right. Humans make mistakes, and I just want everyone to know, like, you know, every day I'm a growing person, and I try to change things, and I try to make things better. And my goal for myself in the future is be able to show people, like, who I am, rather than behind, like, a producer screen or an actor screen. Like, I want people to know who I am. And I promise, like, I'm very entertaining sometimes. And I feel like I can make jokes and I can cook very well. But and I play a mean game of D&D. Yeah, I just want people to know that, like, I am a human being, and, you know, this whole, I've separated myself a bit from the online community just to kind of, like, give myself a breather, because, you know, there's always something going on that we we don't know about, and always something, and I just want people to know that, like, sometimes you have to take a step back and reflect on yourself, and then, you know, let people back in, and that's what I hope to do, hopefully soon.
That's your perspective, and I respect it. You know, that you want to change and improve, and as we all should at the same time. Uh-huh. Like, I at the same time, I hope you never change.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I hope so too. But at the same time, there's a couple things I'm like, yeah, I could probably do this better. But no, like, I appreciate that. And I, again, like, that's why I was really excited that we got a chance to talk, and, like, you get to kind of know me, and you talked about my childhood and stuff, because a lot of people don't know that. So I'm very excited, and I appreciate you asking that. So thank you.
Let's learn more about you.
Okay,
Kiva
let's
Walker.
Do it. Let's do it.
It's been a long day. Water just got turned back on. Electricity's here, and then nobody's dying anymore.
Yes.
After a long day of multiple sessions, what are some favorite drinks to kind of help you relax?
Okay. I am a fiend for I love tea. I love tea. You know, Texas has kind of grown me attuned to sweet tea. We went to Arizona just recently, and Cole had asked, he's like, do you have sweet tea? And they're like, no, we have iced tea with sweetener. And he's like, it's not the same thing. So it was so funny, because I was like, yeah, that is really weird to think now that places don't have sweet tea, but they have iced tea and you can put sugar in it. It's not the same thing, I learned. But I like that. I love Coke. Coca-Cola, not cocaine, Coca-Cola. Let me rephrase that. That was really like, just like, I love Coke. I love Coca-Cola. And I'm trying to cut back on soda just because I drink it a lot. To be honest, and I know a lot of people that do voice stuff, like, I'm a voice coach too. So, like, I don't ever tell my kids to do this, but I love milk. Before and after a session. It actually helps my voice much more. I've learned, like, everyone's like, don't drink milk, it'll, like, cause all this stuff, and then I drink it, and, like, actually it helps me a lot more, just because my voice works a very weird way. I have a lot of, like, just because of, like, how my breathing works, and, like, stuff going on with my body, I was like, milk is actually my best friend before a session sometimes. So I like that. That's what I'll drink usually to wind down, are those things.
Blasphemous. That's it. Hand over your voice actor card and your coach card.
Yep, that's it. I was like, just hand it over. Don't tell anyone that I said. I do not, first of all, I'd like to say as a PSA, I do not condone the drinking of milk before and after a session. I never said that. I just say I do it and you should not follow my example there.
It's too late. I'm keeping it in the show. It's too late.
Yep. That's it, everyone. Exposed. That's going to be the whole thing. It's like Kiba Walker exposed milk question mark.
The thumbnail. Can you imagine?
Yeah. It'd be milk question mark. Are cows bad? Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, that's so funny. Yep, that's true.
Now, it's kind of coming back here as well. The pandemic has certainly had a significant impact on everybody, and the importance of having a solid home studio has become, it used to be a necessity, now it's a requirement. Talk to us about your equipment, what you're currently using, where you're doing it, and maybe even what you started out with.
Absolutely. I was very fortunate. Like I said, my parents have been my biggest fans since day one. And they've been my biggest support system. Of course, there's a lot of stuff that I've paid for myself, but they've helped me obtain because, you know, they're like, we want to see you succeed. And like, you know, they're retired Army vets and they're like, we're literally doing, you know, we want to make sure that you are successful and we want to help you. So when I first started, I asked for my, like I said earlier, I asked for a mic instead of a guitar, and I got a baby blue bottle microphone. My first microphone was a blue spark. That was it. And I had a blue spark with a Presonus audio box, like 22 VSL. And I literally put we got a boom stand and we got a pop filter. And then we literally got like one of the sound shields that hooks onto your mic stand. Then I put a comforter over my head. And that is how I recorded auditions in a bedroom with echo because I didn't have any acoustic foam. I had none of it. The closets were so full that I couldn't even move stuff out of it. So I would like put my laptop up on like the dresser. And then I'd take the mic stand really close to it. I'd hook the comforter right over the top of my head, over the laptop, and I'd be in this little tiny booth, and I would just record that way. And that's how I did my singing, too. I'd like sing 4-minute songs underneath a comforter.
Wow.
It was a lot. And then when we moved to a new house, my dad built like the house we owned, so he was like, yeah, let's build a booth out of the closet. So he cleaned out the closet, and then he extended, like, got a bunch of 2x4s and built, like, a room outside of the closet that was built into the closet. And we put a bunch of sound foam in there. We put my desk and my, like, chair in there, and we put lights in there. And I had this booth that I was working in that was, like, a fully sound booth. Like, it was fully treated. Roof and everything.
Nice.
And so then I upgraded to a blue baby bottle. Same preamp, all that. And then it wasn't until I moved to Reno's, like I got my own apartment after I graduated high school and like, you know, I moved into a closet in my apartment and like, was like, okay, this is going to be my booth. I mentioned in passing, I was like, my dad was like, well, what's the best mic out there? And at the time, like the only thing I knew of was a Neumann TLM 103. And, I was like, yeah, it's a Neumann TLM 103. And he's like, okay, cool. And then my parents went to Hawaii and they're like, oh, make sure you open your presents and like all that stuff that we got you for Christmas. And I was like, for Christmas. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I shouldn't be getting anything. Like, I really just want rent money and food. That's fine. I opened a present and I got a pair of headphones. And I was like, oh, cool. New studio headphones. Beautiful. And then like, there's a box and it's a wooden box and it says Neumann on it. And I said, what did they buy me? And they said, you're kidding me. So they bought me a TLM 103, and that's the mic I'm using right now. I've had it since then and recorded a lot of stuff on it. And my setup now is a closet in my apartment that has sound acoustic foam like everywhere. Not fully covering like the walls, like there's open spaces, but I spaced them out evenly. It's all over the ceiling, on the floor, fully covered, like in the corners with bass traps. Whenever I do full sessions, like remotely, like with like Funimation and on Bang Zoom and stuff, I'll clip the sheets behind me so that there's a big comforter hanging behind me to kind of reflect a little bit of sound. Even without it, it doesn't really like, if I don't have that up, it doesn't even echo in here, which is great. And then I use an Apollo Twin Mark II Universal Audio preamp. I have a Mac desktop, and I use Adobe Audition as well as Premiere Pro. I, of course, have Source Connect, Zoom, all the things. I even just got a IPDTL, I think is what it's called. I just had to get it for a session, and I was like, oh my God, it's expensive. but I had to buy it because I was like, they were like, the session's tomorrow. And I was like, okay. So that is a new endeavor that I now am paying for, which I was like, great, love that. But yeah, that's my booth. Like I literally just have, and then of course I'm an avid collector. I collect a lot of statues, and like we, you know, Cole and I like have like collector's edition systems, and we have those boxes in here. So a lot of my shelving is just covered by like cardboard boxes of like statue boxes and like Switch boxes and like, and my wigs, like my drag is in here too. So I have padding from wigs and like outfits. So it's a lot. And yeah, even in my booth, like I even have pictures of fan art that I've gotten from fans at conventions that are hung up to remind me, like, you know, I'm doing this because I love to entertain people. And it's just really cool to see and remind me that I'm doing that. So yeah, it's my booth.
What is the most prized possession from a collectible?
Ooh, my most prized possession. So I said I'm a big Kingdom Hearts fan. So my most prized collection, I have an entire like three parts of a shelf dedicated to Kingdom Hearts everything. Like I went to the orchestra twice. I have like, so I used to work on GameStop TV as a host. And so I did all the like, I went to E3 and got to interview a lot of different developers for games and like do all that. So the year I went, Kingdom Hearts 3 was being showcased. And my boss at the time knew that I love Kingdom Hearts. Like that was my game. And I said, if I don't cover Kingdom Hearts at E3, I'm going to throw a tantrum. and so they introduced me to the people at Square Enix. And they didn't tell me this. It was a surprise. But they were like, because I thought I was going to do just the interview on the floor, which I did. And then they're like, okay, so now we're going to take you to a different room. And I said, what do you mean? Like, we're going to take you to above the convention, and you're going to play Kingdom Hearts 3. Before, like, way before it came out, and I was like, you're kidding. And they're like, no, secret room. We're going to record your reactions, and you're going to play the first few levels. And the demo that everyone else is playing on the floor, you get to play it first on a Kingdom Hearts PS4 Pro. And, yeah, and they had the collector's edition there. And so I was crying the entire time. Like, it was funny because Square Enix didn't even realize how much I loved the game. So they, when I started crying, they were like, what are you, like, are you okay? And I was like, I'm just emotional. I've been waiting for 15 years for this game. And so I was freaking out. And so I was like, okay, they think I'm crazy. So they were like, oh my God, like, you love the game so much. We're going to send you the deluxe edition for free. And I said,
oh my gosh.
And I was like, okay, just make me cry more. So then the sales, like the sales rep or the, he's like, he has so many different titles now, but Adam with Square Enix was like, we exchanged phone numbers and he would like text me at the convention. And he was like, as Kingdom Hearts was getting like ready to release, he was like, hey, like, we're going to send you Kingdom Hearts. Like, you know, what if he was like, well, do you have the code? Like, are you playing it tonight? And I said, no, like, I don't have it. I was going to just wait. And he's like, no, you're not going to do that. So he sent me a digital code of the game over the phone. And I got to play it the night of launch. And then he was like, also, so we're going to send you the collector's edition. And I said, but you said the deluxe. He's like, no, we're going to do the collector's. So I got the, like, Toy Story, Kingdom Hearts 3, like, figures are still in box, steel bookcase of the game, like, a big box, everything. And I was just, that's my most prized possession in my stuff, next to like the orchestra batons that Cole got me. So like that is my like crowning glory of like everything collectors and nerddom, is I got a collector's edition directly from Square Enix for Kingdom Hearts 3. And it's like my favorite thing. Never been opened. Yeah, that's my most prized possession.
Awesome. I imagine spotlights, you know.
Oh, once I get a space, oh, you bet. It's going to be glass case. It's going to be a code. Like, you're going to have to, like, Mission Impossible from the roof to get in and get it. Laser every night. No one's going to touch that. Like, that is my thing.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I just... What really strikes me in the past hour or 20 minutes that's gone by with you so far, like this really creative and artistic and driven individual who is no different than the rest of us.
Yeah, I'm just like everyone else. If you'd see, like I said, if you see my collection of statues and figures, it would be a problem. Like, there may be someone being like, we might need to put you on Hoarders. I don't know. I'm like, if I had space, it doesn't look as bad. But yeah.
It's an absolute pleasure getting to know the Kiba Walker I had known. And I'd imagine a lot of people who have heard of Kiba Walker have no idea who Kiba Walker is, really. And... I'm so glad and honored to have this opportunity to talk with you like this. This is great.
I really appreciate you having me on here. Yeah. And again, like, it's just cool to get to talk sometimes and let people see who I am, because, you know, I don't get to talk about it much because I'm always in work mode. And that's something that's what I'm trying to change, is always being in work mode is not healthy for me. Yeah. So I definitely want people to know, like, hey, like, I literally love things. So yeah. I'm a person.
Wow. He's real.
I'm real.
Jimmy,
I promise.
He's real.
I'm real. Yeah. But thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Speaking about people getting to know you more and more, where can they go to learn more about you?
Yes, of course. You can follow me on Twitter at @JustKibaWalker. I'm also on Instagram at @Salem_Moon_Drag. And then my website, of course, has all of my info if I'm going to appear on any virtual conventions or if I'm offering classes, which I just started my beginning acting class, my first one online. Like I mentioned, I've been teaching acting and performing for a long time. So I finally was like, let's do a virtual class for fun and see what happens. And so that's on my website, but you can find any announcements there. But Twitter and Instagram are like my main two things. So if you want to see any announcements or see what I'm doing or talk to me about Kingdom Hearts or, you know, plot to steal my Kingdom Hearts Collector's Edition, you're welcome to do that on my Twitter. And, you know, we'll figure out what to do from there.
And Twitch for drag performances?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Is
Twitch.
Is that still going on?
I was going to say, yeah, Twitch, duh. Like, I have my Twitch channel for drag. It's Salem Moon Drag, just all one word. Those will be starting up here in the next month or so. And then if you want to catch me more frequently out of drag, Cole Fiker and I stream every week on the Retrocade on Twitch, and we play retro games and like things from our childhood and see if they still hold up. So if you really like fun banter and improv, you should come see that. It is twitch.tv/the_Retrocade. So yeah. You can check us out there or on Twitter at @TrespassCash.
Fantastic. One last item before we let you go. As an experienced performer in various capacities and genres, and as an experienced producer, director, and voice actor, I think it's easy for everyone, especially in the beginning aspiring voice actor realm, to go out and find advice.
Yeah.
There's endless podcasts and articles. I want to be a voiceactor.com. There's so many resources that are out there. Sure.
Yeah.
What is, and I'm sure you've been asked this question before, but in a slightly different twist, what is an advice that you might have, or a piece of wisdom and knowledge that you might have for a beginning aspiring voice actor that's not commonly heard or seen or easily discovered?
I think one thing that I learned really quickly is that you have to not be afraid. And, you have to be able to take those chances for yourself. So if this is something you want to do, be prepared for the rejection. Be prepared for the hard work. Be prepared for the limited opportunities at first. Because if you go in, you know, I want to do anime, I want to do commercials, like, you have to be prepared mentally to accept that it's going to be a challenge. Some people, and this is a very true statement, some people have gotten walked in or they had an easier time. Everyone's journey is different. So I can't say what will work for you to get started. But what I can do is just say mentally prepare yourself and don't be afraid to experience those feelings and experience those moments and savor them when they're positive and, you know, reflect on them when they're negative. The more you do that, the more able-minded you'll be in an audition, the more ready you'll be when you finally get into the booth, and the more ready you'll be when you get those emails saying, hey, it's, you know, or you don't get them at all and you just wait and then you see a cast announcement and you're like, I guess it's not me. A lot of the time I see new voice actors so dwelling on the fact that it wasn't them and they have to take a mental break. Take those mental breaks for yourself, but don't let it control your life. Because at the end of the day, that door closed, but that doesn't mean that you were bad. It doesn't mean that the director saw your audition and said, not them. What it means is that, you know, it's just not the right fit for that show. But you don't know what that director's going to do next. You don't know who they sent it to. People are always watching. So allow yourself to have that break privately and then go back out there and kick some ass. That's all I have to say.
Be brave enough to go out there and kick some ass.
Exactly.
That's so good. That's good. I don't find that in any article. I'd imagine.
Yeah,
that's
I was
going
to say, like, if someone had told me be brave and kick some ass, I'd be like, okay, I guess that's what I'm going to do. So, yeah, that's my advice. I it really hurts seeing a lot of really talented people get discouraged really quickly. And it's something I'm like, y'all, like, You have to let yourself be upset. That's fine. But what you have to do is how you rebound from it and how you react to it, because you can't let other people that have had years of experience or people that maybe have the same experience as you but got a different opportunity, you can't let that control your life. You got to worry about you, because that's what the directors want is you. They don't want, you know, they don't want the attitude, and they don't want all that. They want you and genuine you. And you have to realize that quickly. And once you do, I think you'll be more successful.
Yeah. True words of wisdom. Kiba Walker, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for spending some time here with me this afternoon on your end, morning on my end still.
Yeah.
I need to finish my coffee. It's coffee. Wonderful. And fantastic hearing your stories and then having this conversation. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me again. And I really enjoyed talking with you. And I hope my story, you know, inspired some people. That'd be great.
Oh, more than you know. More than you know. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And looking forward to the future things that are coming out.
Yes,
all these
future
announcements.
Things. All these announcements. Trust me, it's going to be so fun. I'm so excited.
That's awesome. Thank you again for being here. That's great.
Thank you.
This has been Voice Actor Showcase. Visit our website at voiceactorshowcase.com. If you'd like to be featured on this podcast, contact us at voiceactorshowcase.com. Thanks for listening.